Politics in the Age of Anne. A consensus view has emerged from work on the period over the last 20 years that the Age of Anne saw the synthesis of a basic polarity between Whig and Tory. It was not until the late 1670s that Englishmen first began to group themselves into the two great confederations, soon to be called Whigs and Tories. But much of the party conflict of that period must be traced back to the period of the first English Revolution in the 1640s. For example, much of the Tory election propaganda in the reign of Anne referred to no tub preachers, no Presbyterian rebellion, and save the Queen's white neck. These were all phrases harking back to the era of the Civil War. The names Whig and Tory were first used, as far as politics was concerned, during the exclusion crisis. Between 1679 and 1681, there were three short-lived parliaments divided into two camps. The Tories, urged on by Anglican churchmen, espoused the cause of the crown and became committed to an ideology of passive obedience and non-resistance to lawfully appointed monarchs, including such ideas as the divine right of kings. The Whigs, on the other hand, developed rival theories of republicanism or contractual government, which meant that a breach of trust on the part of the ruler could lead to a withdrawal of support. They argued that it was the right of all subjects to resist misgovernment. Once the crisis had passed, the particular ideologies that had brought the parties into existence were eclipsed, but the names and the divisions remained. The trend to party politics in Anne's reign was influenced by a number of variables. First, the monarchs. Anne, like William and Mary before her, was concerned to incorporate both Whigs and Tories into the political machinery of the state. But the interests of the two political parties were balanced against the rights and prerogatives of the crown. Secondly, the Triennial Act of 1694 encouraged party conflict. For example, between January 1701 and January 1715, there were eight general elections, four of which were precipitated by the Act. Thirdly, this party conflict was continued well beyond the confines of Westminster to the country at large. And lastly, the conflict in the church and the debate about such issues as religious minorities, the succession, and the sharp divisions between high and low church reached their climax in Anne's reign. The last parliamentary session of William's reign was a watershed in ushering in this period of the so-called Rage of Party. It was the most Tory parliament elected since the Revolution. The polarisation was compounded by political differences over the Spanish succession crisis, and the English succession question also helped to define and compound party hostility. The Act of Settlement of 1701 gave the electress Sophia of Hanover, and the heirs of her body being Protestant, a statutory title to the throne of England after Anne's death. But this did not end party anxieties about the succession. Anne was under no delusions that her claim to the throne had been decided by Parliament, and indeed she personally objected to the term divine right being used in conjunction with her authority. In her relationship with parties and Parliament, Anne made a great deal of use of managers. In the beginning, Godolphin and Marlborough, and when they lost the Queen's confidence after 1710, Anne turned to Harley, the Earl of Oxford, and to a lesser extent, Shrewsbury. Anne also had a number of female favourites whose political influence is hard to measure. Politically, Anne's reign falls into two distinct phases, the first dominated by the Marlborough-Godolphin alliance until 1710, and the latter by Robert Harley's administrations. However, this appearance of stability obscures to a great extent the various measures of contention which put the ministries at risk. Party pressure came from several sources. firstly from the High Tories, who tried to establish a total monopoly of office in central government and in the localities. Secondly, after 1705, a revived Whig party began to offer a more coherent opposition. Thirdly, from around 1708 to 1710, there began to be a Tory opposition led by Harley from the backbenches. The Tories saw themselves as the representatives of the landowning classes. They saw themselves as freeholders as well as gentry, and the upholders of the national and social unity and harmony. They were independents struggling against oligarchy. The 1710 elections heralded the last Tory ministry until the accession of George III, but in 1710 that thought would have been far from the minds of Tory politicians and party managers. There was a massive Tory majority in 1710 and again in 1713. The new Tory ministry achieved a popular and successful peace settlement at Utrecht, which was followed by a welcome reduction in taxes and by economic revival. In addition, the Whig majority in the Lords was tackled by the creation of a number of Tory peers in 1711. Yet by 1714, when Queen Anne died, the Tories had divided into irreconcilable factions. They were tarred with the charge that they opposed the Protestant succession and that they wished to bring back the Pretender. Whilst in office, they had begun to be seduced by large levels of corruption, thus making nonsense of Tory claims to clean up the political process. 1714 proved to be a crucial year in the history of the Tory party. In spite of their large majority, they were split at the top, and there was open warfare between the Harley, stroke Oxford and Bolingbroke factions. Their growing unease about the prospect of an unsympathetic successor to the rapidly failing Queen Anne drove Bolingbroke to seek to negotiate with the Pretender, a highly risky and ultimately fatal manoeuvre. However, it was not merely personal factors that spelt the end for the Tory party after 1714. The Tories had been torn between the legal and religious arguments in favour of Hanover and the emotional and ideological interests that drew them towards the Stuart Pretender. The Tories were not to hold power as a party until perhaps the ministry of Lord Liverpool in 1812, over a century later.